Moncrief on News Talk.
And I'm delighted to say Esa McCarthy, Jean Smullen and Fionnuala Jones join us all once again. Good afternoon to you all.
Hello, how are you?
Okay. Hi, Sean.
Good hellos from everyone. Jean, given you know what's going to be happening over the weekend, we'll all be going out for romantic dinners and
we'll all be staying in for romantic dinners. or you could be doing takeaway. That's the big thing. Everybody going to the posh restaurants and getting takeaway. So I'm just looking at some wines, and you know, you might not necessarily be, if you're on your own now, you might be having the girlies over or the guys over for a Zoom party, and you're all drinking wine in your own houses and saying, ah, to hell with it, let's have a few glasses and a great old chat and celebrate the day of love that way. So anyway, I've got two wines to look at that I hope you like, that will just do the job perfectly to go for anything you're doing on Valentine's Day.
One of them, of course, is pink.
You couldn't have anything else.
Indeed,
you know?
Yes. Takeaways and Zoom. We're all very excited at that prospect, given the novelty of an experience like that. Esther, the two movies today, one probably people have heard about in advance. The second one is WTF?
Yes. I mean, as I watched Nicolas Cage disemboweling a robot alligator with a broken mop,
I said,
it's okay. It's okay. Esther. You're having one of those weird COVID dreams again, and this isn't real, but it is real. It's an actual thing. So crazy. Willy's Wonderland, even by Nicolas Cage standards, crazy, crazy stuff. But also really, really bad, you know, if you hear...
Okay, but isn't there another film on Netflix where he's a magician or something?
Is that a new one as well?
I don't know. There's a picture of him running. That's the only thing I can tell you about that film. Okay. But then again, he seems to make a film every 6 weeks. He's incredible.
That's going on. That's happening, yeah. I think that's part of the problem, you know. I think there is a credibility issue now for a while with Nicolas Cage and... It's a shame, you know, because when he's good, he can be so, so good.
The confusingly titled News of the World actually sounds more heartwarming than a film with a title like that.
Yes, it's not a thriller about a tabloid newspaper. It's an actual Western. Paul Greengrass here directing Tom Hanks and a young German actress by the name of Helena Zengel. Watch out for this girl. She is going to be about 5 years after the US, the American Civil War. And amazingly, unless you count Woody of Toy Story, of course, it's the first time Tom Hanks has ever played a cowboy, being in a Western. So, you know, he seems made for a role like that. So it's nice to see him in something like that.
Okay. We'll look forward to hearing about that. And Fionnuala, have you any big plans for Sunday?
And I am getting a fancy restaurant box, and I make no excuses for that. And I'm going to eat it all myself. Lots of pasta, lots of pizza. I'm quite excited now, to be honest.
Okay. And is there a particular place you get your fancy takeaway from?
So Sprezzatura is a pasta place off Camden Street, and I'm obsessed with it. It's so cheap, but it's like the best. It's so good. It's like Irish twists on like actual Italian dishes. And they've just done this at-home box with platform pizza, which I think is in Bray. And the minute they put it up on Instagram, I was like, I'll take as many boxes as you can give me, because that's how good Sprezzatura is. Would recommend if anyone hasn't made food plans this weekend yet.
Okay.
So, so good.
Is it cooked when it arrives, or do you have to do work?
You do have to do that bit yourself, but it's worth it. Trust me, it is worth it. But if you're feeling incredibly lazy, maybe look for something else.
Yes.
I wouldn't blame you, to be honest.
Somebody texted in to say, honestly, the thought of another takeaway makes me depressed. My Chinese last weekend answered with the usual. Depressing. Right. Anyway, this is a very interesting story. Shelley Duvall. And I suppose people, you know, might remember Shelley Duvall from The Shining, but then she was never seen again. And she's given an interview to The Hollywood Reporter, I think it is, kind of explaining what happened.
Yes, this is a really good interview if anyone wants to check this out after this, with really nice photos to go along with it. So basically, as you said, haven't heard from Shelley Duvall since 2016. She did an interview with Dr. Phil, which didn't go down well. I'll get into it in a minute. But basically, it was her kind of going back through the experience of shooting with Stanley Kubrick. There's been kind of lots of things said about his behavior on set, particularly towards her at the time. And a lot of people said that was kind of the reason why she withdrew from public life. She kind of gives other reasons, but she goes into kind of his difficult filming method and saying about how he wouldn't print anything until they got like 35 takes. So she was obviously, everyone knows The Shining, like doing a lot of running, a lot of crying, carrying the child. She said it got hard. And eventually her body just kind of responded to the experience, and she said it was like knowing that she had to get up and cry for however many hours a day, her body was just like, no, I can't do it. And she started crying at the thought. She's kind of said as well that he had his moments in terms of him being like warm and friendly towards her, but she's also said that he absolutely had an abusive and violent streak in him. She said even at one point Jack Nicholson, her co-star, kind of noticed the behavior, and he kind of said, I don't know how you do this, I honestly don't know how you're coping. And even Angelica Houston, she was going out with Nicholson at the time, and I think her and Duvall are still friends. She said that it kind of seemed like they weren't actually that sympathetic towards her, and it seemed like it was kind of the boys ganging up on her. Now, she said that could be her misread on the situation, but that's just what she's felt. Shelley has said that she still kind of can't really watch The Shining anymore. She says she just looks back and she remembers the 3 weeks doing it like every single day. And Jack was so good, so scary. She said she could only imagine how many women go through this kind of thing. But she said her reason for withdrawing from the public eye wasn't necessarily because of her experience on set. She said it was a couple of things to do with her financial situation. There was an earthquake in 1994 that damaged her house, so she moved to rural Texas and basically didn't do an interview until this 2016 interview with Dr. Phil, which was widely criticized at the time. Kind of seemed like him and the show were exploiting her mental health struggles. There's a couple of quotes she says, I'll let people go back and watch it, but she just doesn't seem to be fully with it. And she said in this interview with The Hollywood Reporter that she regrets it, she wished she hadn't done it, and she said she kind of found out the hard way. So a really insightful interview. I would I'd definitely recommend people read it.
All right, so Dr. Phil's a dick, who knew?
In summary, yes.
Yes. So Jean, what would you like to tell us about first?
We have to go with the pink. We'll go with the rosé.
We'll go with
first.
The pink, so okay, right.
Okay. Now, both the wines today are available in Lidl, and this, the rosé wine, is the 2019 Maison François du Bessay. It's a Pays-d'Oc rosé, and it's made from the Pinot Noir grape variety, which, as we all know, is the great red grape of Burgundy. Now, just let's talk about the rosé revolution, right? 6% of all wines sold in the Irish market now are rosé, and about 5 years ago, it was about 3%, right? So how did this happen? Well, I'm going to go back to the summer of about 1999. I was in Provence on holidays, and we were sitting there in the front, you know, on the quayside, drinking, you know, very dry Provençal rosé and eating it with fish stew. It was all lovely. You know, those days when we used to go on holidays, you remember them. Mm. And about 7 years after that, a fellow called Sacha Lichine, who came from Bordeaux, bought a Provençal winery called Château d'Escalin. And his bid was he was going to create a premium rosé that you would just knock the socks off everything else. And he did. And that rosé was called Whispering Angel. And the rest, as they say, is history.
Yeah.
So that was about the mid-noughties. Now, rosé was kind of just, you know, limping along. And, you know, but Whispering Angel started the whole momentum. And because of the success of that, everybody else started doing copycat wines. And then the celebrities, I mean, more recently, everybody from Graham Norton has a good rosé from the south of France. Sarah Jessica Parker makes one in Gascony. Even Kylie has her signature rosé. So it's become a thing, right? A big thing, particularly in the last 2 or 3 years. So now everybody's drinking pink. And of course, on Valentine's Day, whether it's the Zoom party or you're sitting with your loved one, having something nice to eat, start the evening or the afternoon or whenever you're going to be celebrating Valentine's Day with a nice glass of pink. And this one is perfect, right?
So it's pretty zingy now. I have a glass in front of me now. It's yeah.
Bone dry, yeah. Right? Tons of raspberry, right? Really lovely summer fruit flavors. A very crisp finish, you know. You know, I mean, you can make white wine from red grapes, but you can't make red wine from white grapes, right? So where rosé gets its color from is the skin of the red grapes. Now, there's two ways of doing it. Either you harvest the red grapes, crush them. And then when you're making the wine, just leave the skin contact there for just a tiny period of time. Just get the very base color, or else you blend the red and white wines together, which is called the Sangui method, which really isn't used that much anymore. So this one anyway, is it's a dry rosé from the south of France, from the Languedoc. And because Pinot Noir is not native to the Languedoc, it's an IGP wine and a Van Paydock wine. But I just think whether you're having, like, say, you want to start with, say, some smoked salmon on brown soda bread, a nice glass of rosé, a great way to start it. And then even if you're just sitting having a party chat with your friends, like, rosé goes down very well. 12.5% alcohol by volume at a great price, $7.99. Now, just one other thing. Starting next Thursday, February 25th, Lidl are starting their French wine favourites. And in their shops, for a limited time, while stocks last, they'll have about 16. And this is one of them. And it's definitely worth it. So red, white, rosé. If you're into French wine, you know, have a try of it. But if you want to get something, this one is in the shops now for Valentine's Day. So enjoy it. It's super wine.
Game ball. Right. A couple of unusual ones for you, Jean. Sarah says, last week I had a Georgian wine called Pheasant's Tears. It was delicious, but a very unique taste. Does Jean know of it? Is this a uniquely Georgian grape, or what is it about that was so strange?
The whole thing about Georgian wine is that the home of winemaking originated in Azerbaijan and Georgia, in around that part of the world. You know, they have evidence going back to 7000 BC of amphora, where they have found traces of wine in it. So that is the cradle of the wine industry. Now, traditionally in Georgia, they make the wines using a system called Quervy, which is basically they still use those big same amphora, those big clay amphoras. They bury them under the ground and they let the wines ferment under the ground, which is the most natural. That was originally how wine was made back in the days when Neolithic man suddenly discovered what happened when the fermentation process started. Georgian wines are absolutely and utterly fantastic. I do know Pheasant's Tears. It's a lovely wine. They have this they're the most natural wines you're ever going to get. Mm. They're made in a very, very natural way. They don't come cheap, and there's not a huge amount of them available. But like rosé, that's another wine style that particularly in the last 5 years has become incredibly fashionable, as we've seen the rise of people enjoying the more national or orange wines, is what they call them, because the wine has a pink tinge to it. It's white. It's a white wine, but it's got this kind of orange because they leave the skins in contact with the fermenting must. Beautiful wines and Georgian wines, definitely worth a try.
Question number two. Fia Colum says, my Slovenian girlfriend hasn't managed to get home since the start of the pandemic. I'd like to get her a wine that's sort of a taste of home if I could. Any idea where I might get a good Slovenian wine in Dublin?
On the Grapevine in Dalkey, who will do deliveries. Liam Cabot, who is an Irish guy living out in Westport, he actually has a winery. Oh, and 64 Wine has it as well. He and they do deliveries too. They're in Glasthule. Liam makes the most amazing Slovenian wines. And, you know, Slovenia is fabulous, particularly for their white wines. I was visited there in 2004, an amazing place. You know, just unbelievably good wine. So either on the Grapevine in Dalkey or 64 Wine, and they have websites and you'll be able to order online and they'll be able to deliver for you.
Okay, good stuff. Esther, I know we usually start with the better of the two films, but I'm kind of intrigued by Willy's Wonderland.
With a name like that, I think we have to go first.
Indeed, yeah. It's bringing out my inner 16-year-old. Right, Willy's Wonderland coming up after this break.
Welcome to Willy's Wonderland. Spend the night cleaning Willy's Wonderland, and I will pay to have your car fixed. Deal? You are officially on staff. Let's get the hell out of here. I can't stand to hear a grown man scream.
This place has a dark history. I know the bullshit story they told you. It's a lie. You're here to be a human sacrifice. Have you been listening to a word I've been saying?
Crikey, that was loud. Right, that's Willy's Wonderland. Esther, take it away.
Look, I know there are people, there's a whole audience out there who do want to see Nicolas Cage fighting a giant mechanical ostrich. But it's not worth your money. It's just not worth your money. And it's just, it's so bizarre, this. And I've just, yeah, I'm still kind of going, did I see that? Did all of those things happen? First of all, it's really quite violent, actually. It gets in as violent as disemboweling something that's mechanical can be, you know. But it gets a 15 cert, which surprised me a little. And it's kind of, there's a lot of the old horror tropes in it as well, a lot of the old cliches that are in bad horror movies that thankfully really good filmmakers have gotten away from in recent years, and by kind of reinventing the horror. So it was kind of, it's a lazy film, I suppose. And I really don't know what Nicolas Cage is doing in it. It's definitely the case that his entire budget, the entire budget of the film was his fee, because it's so badly made. Like, there's even really clumsy cuts once or twice early in the film that had me scratching my head. But the premise is, wait for it, his car breaks down and his character, who we know only as the janitor, so that he doesn't have a real name, he wears sunglasses all the time and he looks badass. So I really got the impression that we're aiming for Keanu Reeves in the John Wick movies, which have become huge, huge successes. But we're nowhere close here. But he's given, his car breaks down and he's given the option of spending a night cleaning this rundown amusement centre, and that they will repair the car. And he's this kind of badass drifter, doesn't speak much, if at all, but is pretty good with violence. Mm. So for no reason whatsoever, he's sent into an amusement arcade overnight to clean it in, you know, payment for having his car fixed. So making complete sense from the start. It was this arcade is closed down, but it was a popular kids party venue. And one of its biggest draws was these life-sized kind of animatronic puppets or creatures that sing birthday songs. What we don't know, Sean, is they're serial killers. Mm. They're actual serial killers. And the janitor has been tricked. And the owners who sent him in there are basically hoping he will kill them all so that they can reopen the place. But they right. don't really expect that, because there has been previous. Other people have been tricked into going there before, and they are toast. So, yeah, that's the premise. So it's basically like 90 minutes of Nicolas Cage lamping these giant robots. And they're... Then they come, like, then this group of teenagers break in to try and get him out of there, because they know what's been happening. And when that happens, the stakes get higher and bloodier, because he has to protect all them as well. And there really is no story beyond that work, and you know, we're talking about, because I mean, I think what they're trying to do is use Nicolas Cage's offbeat appeal, which I've actually gotten on board with in a lot of his performances. I know some people that, you know, that kind of dazed chaos that he carries in his resting face. I've kind of liked that sometimes. I thought it's been really used well by good filmmakers, like, for example, Spike Jonze in Adaptation, or the Coens in Raising Arizona. But here... This is a film that doesn't know what to do with its leading man, and it's kind of sad to see, actually, to see someone who had such great performances, such great films earlier on in his career, making junk like this. And it's absolute junk, you know, just weird, but not in a good way, you know. And it's I'm wondering, is it because of all his financial problems? Like, he did run into a lot of trouble, I think, about 10 years ago. He faced foreclosure on properties, and he ended up having to give revenue in the US about $6 million in property taxes, because he was known for being a bit of a spender. His purchases included over the years an island, a Bavarian castle, and a dinosaur skull. So he was known for being a lavish spender.
Money well spent, if you ask me. The thing is, Esther, that as a movie reviewer, you're biased basically towards films that are good. Whereas Nicolas Cage seems to have made something of a mini career of just doing these really schlocky B movie type rubbish that a certain cohort of people love.
Yeah, I mean, it is a schlocky horror show is what I call it. Look, just because it's silly and it doesn't take itself seriously, and this doesn't, it's totally winking at you the whole time.
All right.
That doesn't mean, that's what doesn't mean it's worth your time or money, though. Yeah. Sometimes movies are just bad, you know, and they can't, you know, the whole guilty pleasure thing gets thrown around a bit. But I just found this depressing, man, to see. It's really poorly made filmmaking. It's a guy by the name of Kevin Lewis. It's his first feature in 14 years, which could tell its own story, you know. Very one-dimensional characters. The women are all in this horror, all either sluts or virgins. And I'm done with that as well, you know. I want better storytelling than that. Very cut-out cardboard characters. Even Cage isn't good in it. Like, it's a very stilted performance from him. Mm. He doesn't bring any kind of quirk to it other than being nonverbal, you know, and wearing sunglasses. So, you know, it's just bad, man. It's bad.
Where can people avoid this film?
It's on various rental platforms from today, so you can get it on all the usual platforms. Yeah.
Right. Okay.
It's one of those I see them so you don't have to, honestly.
Okay, fair enough. We should actually have a sting called Where Can I Get 2 Hours of My Life Back, Esther? Or, you know, words to that effect. Watched Malcolm and Mary last week because Esther made it sound so intriguing. Well, it wasn't. Who do I talk to about a refund of my time? Talk about indulgent and trying too hard.
As I said, I liked it a lot, but I knew it would drive some people mad. And indulgent is a fair assessment, I think, for sure.
Yeah. Fanula. Now, is it the case that Kate Winslet worked as an intimacy coordinator even though she wasn't getting paid for it?
Yes. So she's due to star in a new HBO series called Mayor of Easttown. And she took on the role of intimacy coordinator, as you said, to support her on-screen daughter, who's played by Angori Rice. She's a bit younger than her. And she revealed this on the How I Found My Voice podcast, which is hosted by Samira Ahmed. And she basically just said that there was no intimacy coordinator hired for the scene because the characters actually stay clothed throughout. So they just figured there wasn't a need. But Kate thought that Angori looked a bit nervous. So she said, she was like, look, I'm going to be around for this. I'm going to stay. I won't leave the set. So the way the scene was set up was that I think it was happening in a car. So Kate Winslet ended up staying in the boot of the car just to make sure everything was okay. Everyone felt comfortable, which, I mean, fair play. And she kind of went into talking a bit more about how even as recently as 2019, she starred in Ammonite alongside Saoirse Ronan and they didn't have an intimacy coordinator. And I mean, that's like very recent, and there's a lot of love scenes in that
film. I wonder,
film.
Is it like they don't have an intimate, they don't feel they need one if it's two women kissing?
I'd say there is an element of that, but obviously I would strongly disagree, and I think they should be kind of commonplace. And Kate agrees. She said that now I think they need to be more common, and she kind of reflected back on previous year roles and said that she wished they'd been there, and she described it as like that it's just having a friend there to say, can you ask him just not to put his hands there, so it's not the actor or the person having to say it, which can obviously be quite awkward if you're in that position.
Yeah, and sure, exactly the same could be the case if it's two women or two men or two whatever.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of an odd one. All right. Right. We do have to take a commercial break. You are listening to The Moncrief Show on News Talk. One more movie, one more wine after this. 53106 is our text number that will cost you 30 cents. You are listening to The Moncrief Show on News Talk. I forgot to mention earlier on that the hashtag this week is Communist Movies, following on the piece we did earlier on in the week about the Chinese billionaire Jack Ma, who suddenly disappeared. So if you want to check those out on Twitter, many of them are excellent. I'll try and read some out if I have any time left. Just to balance things up, Esther Norman says, I watched Malcolm and Mary after last week's recommendation. Loved every minute of it. Best film of the year, superbly acted and beautifully filmed, says Norman. John in Navan also says, your description of Nicolas Cage as dazed chaos, the most perfect description of Nicolas Cage I've ever heard. Well done, Esther. So, Jean, tell us about our next wine today.
Hey, we're going to Chile and we're going to go have a Malbec from Chile. Now, everybody associates Malbec, which is a French grape variety which originates in southwest France, with Argentina. But in fact, Chile make Malbec as well. The thing is, Chile actually makes some very good Malbec. But because when you think of Malbec these days, you think of Argentina, they kind of didn't want to go into competition with them. They kind of said, well, look, we're really good on Cabernet Sauvignon and, you know, Syrah is very good. Let's stick with what we're good at. But now we're starting with the rise in popularity of the Malbec grape. we are starting to see more Malbecs coming out of Chile. So this one again is in Lidl. It's their 2019 Malbec Reserva Privada Valley Central Valley. That means that the grapes come from anywhere in the sort of Central Valley of Chile. It's normally priced at $7.86, but this weekend Lidl have a Super Savers offer, and this one is €4.71. And they have a white counterpart as well, which is the Australian Chardonnay Colombard at €3.53. So if you're actually watching the pennies, as a lot of people are these days, and you want to fancy a glass or two of wine while you're with your dinner with your partner, then that's a really good offer this weekend. So to get back to the wine, what's the difference between Chilean and Argentinian Malbec? Well, the bottom line is altitude. In Argentina, most of the vineyards are centered around Mendoza, which is the other side of the Andes Mountains to Chile. And everything is at high altitude, you know, everything about 1500 meters above sea level. And that makes a big difference to the style of wine, because the higher the altitude, the cooler it is in the evening. So that's what makes Argentine Malbec so absolutely unique. Chile, on the other hand, is you know, you've got the Andes Mountains and then you've got the Pacific Ocean. It's a very long, thin, narrow country, about 200 kilometers across, right? It's long and narrow. And most of the vineyards are planted in the valleys that kind of run east to west between the Pacific Ocean and the Andes Mountains. It's also a warm Mediterranean climate. So where the grapes are grown are very, very different to where the grapes are grown in Argentina. But the thing is that what you get with a Chilean Malbec is a much more what we call New World style of wine. In other words, it's much more fruit forward. There's loads of ripe fruit. It's very easy to drink. It's kind of low in acidity, high in tannin normally. But this one isn't, because it's actually the warm Mediterranean climate has meant the ripe sunshine has softened all the tannins out. So, I think lots of, like, oh, dare I say purple fruit. I just got blueberries on this one. I thought, gosh, that's something I haven't tasted before. Really fruity, lovely blueberry fruit, very soft tannin. At this price, brilliant value. And so if you're going to go for pepperoni pizza or even the Italian that Fanula was mentioning, or any sort of pasta dish, this is made to go with it. Or if you like fish, try something like salmon and fresh asparagus linguine if you're going to get really posh about cooking over the weekend. Super wine. And again, at this price, and it's only for this weekend that it's on that special offer, definitely one to go for.
Absolutely. Colin says, I've no option now, but I must watch Willy's Wonderland just to see how bad it really is. Well, maybe to take your mind off that, Colin, our second film today is News of the World. Here's a clip.
I'm here to tell you about the 11 men who lived.
Yeah.
Who survived that fire. The 11 men who fought back against their deadly fate.
Yes. Yes.
Thought I told you to read from the E-Rat, Pat.
Well, see, Mr. Farley, I was wondering if folks might prefer some storytelling from places outside of E-Rat. Just for tonight, Mr. Farley.
I think you ought to read from the E-Rat all the same, Captain. Sort of thing these people expect to hear.
How about we vote on it?
How about we go?
There you go. That's News of the World. And it is. I find it hard to believe that this is the only time that Tom Hanks has done a cowboy movie.
Absolutely. It's amazing, isn't it? And he's made for it. And I was a little bit disappointed with this, though, I have to say, because I was very on board. I'm not a huge Western person by nature, but I was very on board with this because it was seeing Tom Hanks reunited with Paul Greengrass, who's a brilliant British filmmaker, who worked with Hanks, I think, in maybe one of the most underrated films of the last 20 years, which is Captain Phillips. I loved that film. And of course, Greengrass is known for this kind of frenetic action and jittery camera work. And you can almost feel you're in a fairground ride with him at times. It can be almost overwhelming. So this is a real departure for him. The big Western landscapes, a kind of a slow burner. But it's too much of a departure. I think it misses Greengrass's usual ability to build tension and drama, I think. The film felt a bit safe and staid, but I have to say, Hanks and his young co-star Helena Zengel carry it. They keep it going. So he's Captain Kidd, a former Confederate, interestingly enough, and he's got this kind of sadness about him. He's making a living 5 years after the war by travelling village to village with international newspapers, hence the title, giving kind of often illiterate and broke locals the world news as a form of engagement and entertainment. And then one day he happens upon this body of a black man who is in the company of a young white girl who is terrified. She can't speak to him. She's clearly of European descent, but she can only speak Kiowa, which is a language spoken by the Native Americans. So she has obviously got a very interesting backstory there, which I won't ruin by going into. But he tries to set about reuniting her, finding out where she came from, and you know, reuniting her with her family, I suppose. But this is a place ravaged by war and lawlessness, so their journey in doing that is not going to be straightforward. I just found this ponderously slow, Sean. It's over 2 hours and it really feels it. I think if you love the Western, though, you're going to get a lot of value out of this. I just thought, like, there is one very, very powerful scene in the first hour where a group of sex traffickers take a nasty interest in the girl, and it's really tense and scary. And by comparison, then the second hour of the film feels a little bit limp, I think. But Zengel, Helena Zengel, she is just going to be a megastar. She's 12 years of age. She's German. She already starred in a big hit movie in Germany that kind of broke out and got screened, released here, called System Crasher. A film that relied entirely in the power of her performance, because she was playing a young delinquent child. And she has, I would imagine that's why Greengrass cast her in this, and she has built beautifully on it. I think a big Hollywood career beckons for her. She has this screen presence that is truly amazing.
Yeah, you know, is there a message here, given that we're in the era of fake news and all this kind of stuff, and the most trusted man in America is riding around telling people what's going on?
Yeah, there is a bit of that. I tried not to feed into the politics of it too much, but there's a bit of that kind of the white man saving people as well, you know. It did feel, it's probably not a fair assessment, but it can be open to criticisms of that kind, I think. And I don't think that's what someone of the energy of Greengrass was trying to achieve. He's a more interesting filmmaker than that. But just it just played it safe. That was the problem for me.
Yeah, okay. Ah, that's a shame, as you said. Have you seen Saint Maud yet? Brian wants to know. It's one of the best movies I've seen in years.
I haven't seen it yet. I have heard terrific word on it. And it was supposed to be released here, but then got delayed, actually, during our pre-Christmas October-ish lockdown. So it's I think it's probably available to rent now, but let me check that. The reviews for it have been excellent. It's been winning Best British Film all over the place.
Right. And Anne wants to know, where can I get Pheasant's Tears Georgian wine?
In the independent off license. You could try the Corkscrew in Chatham Street, Donnybrook Fair in Dublin. You could try Bradley's in Cork, the Wine Centre in Kilkenny. That's the sort of place you're going to get it.
Yeah, okie dokie. And finally, Fionnuala, Burt Reynolds has been finally laid to rest, but like after 2.5 years or something.
2.5 years, yeah. A small private ceremony was held this year, and he finally made his way to his final resting place at the Hollywood Forever Cemetery. He was cremated, obviously, at the time of his death, but it's taken a little bit of time to get him to this final spot. There's a temporary headstone there at the minute that obviously just says Burt Reynolds, but the owner of the Hollywood Forever Cemetery, Tyler Cassidy, he said that there's a bust being commissioned, and the hope is that it will be finished and unveiled and opened to the public in September for the third anniversary of his death. for people to finish. Some lovely little photos came out of it as well, like very poignant. There was a fan that arrived and left a tiny little Trans Am car that obviously became synonymous with Reynolds, with Smokey and the Bandit, or whatever else. Very poignant, very nice. Just glad he's there now after all that time.
And you know, where's he been for the last 2 years? Has he been like in someone's bag in the boot of their car? Did they lose him? Can we be sure it was actually Burt Reynolds?
Oh my God, someone's made a horrible mistake there, dusting or something. I don't even want to know. But yeah, no word on what he was doing in the meantime, on a grand adventure, seemingly.
Not really that grand if he'd been cremated 2.5 years ago. Right, thanks very much, Atufa Nuala. The two wines, will you say again the names of the two wines, Jean, because people are always asking.
I will, of course. The red wine was the 2019 Malbec Reserva Privada from the Central Valley, on offer this weekend at $4.71. There's a llama on the bottle, and I also tweeted a picture of the bottle. And then the rosé is the French rosé. It's 2019 Maison Francois Dubessy, and it's pink, and it's $7.99, and it's Pinot Noir, and they've got Pinot Noir in the label, and I also put that in my tweet.
Yeah, absolutely. And the two films were News of the World, which is Tom Hanks' latest film, and Willy's Wonderland, which is Nicolas Cage's latest fever dream. Esther, Fanula, Jean, thank you all very much. That's our lot.
Moncrief on News Talk.